Mom.
Hi, Daphne.
How goes it?
It goes. I'm kind of on the verge of maybe losing my voice, so we'll see what happens.
So she sounds real throaty, real sexy, all the things.
Yeah, that's it. Or sick. I don't know, but I don't feel sick. I feel fine, so I don't know.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you don't feel sick since we're sitting very close to one another.
Right.
I can't get sick.
No.
Because guess what I just started? My master's program.
Yay.
Yeah. It's exciting.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, I'm happy I got accepted 1 week before the program started.
No shit.
It's stressful.
It's fine.
But then it turned out that my acceptance had actually been sitting there for like 3 weeks and I just didn't know how to access it.
Fuck. It would have been cool of them to let you know.
Right. It would have been very cool. And then all of a sudden, after I emailed them, then everything showed up in my email.
So is that our disturbing fact?
Yeah. That's the disturbing fact of the day.
All right.
What you got?
I have...
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. You've heard of black holes in space, right?
Yes.
Why did you have to think about that?
Well, because I was thinking of a different black hole.
All righty then.
Yes, I've heard of black holes in space.
In space.
That they outer space. Suck up everything.
They suck up everything.
Yep. Please don't tell me we're headed towards one or one's headed towards us.
I don't think a black hole can come towards us. I don't know. I could be wrong.
I feel like it could enter our solar system.
Yeah, I guess it could. So technically, while they're not called black holes, in the ocean, they're called eddies, but they're identical to black holes. They can, like, whatever's in their path is... It's inescapable from being in the path. And some of these eddies in the ocean are as big as 93 miles in diameter.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's huge. Is that like the layer under the ocean where the Loch Ness Monster is in Megalodons?
Probably the Megalodons. The Loch Ness Monster is not in the ocean.
Oh, oops.
He's in the Loch Ness. She is in the Loch Ness.
Nessie? No. Okay. Is that like where the Megalodons live, though?
Well, probably.
Like that, like, slip where things can't get out from under the bottom of the ocean? You've heard of that, yeah?
I have heard of that, yeah. But it doesn't say anything about that. About, like, there being an extra, like, the slip layer and weird shit that we supposedly don't know about, but we actually do know about. That's in that... Well, you know how, like, the Megalodon... Like,
I guess you just had to be there and see my face.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know how, like... People deny shit that we know exists.
Like the Megalodon?
Yeah, exactly.
And dinosaurs?
Yes. Well, how can... Okay, whatever.
Well, I feel like people do.
Yeah.
Deny them.
People are weird.
People are dumb.
I was
going to
say people are stupid, but I'm trying to be nice.
Well, no, I think people are dumb if they don't think dinosaurs are real.
Like, yeah.
We have their bones.
Yeah, right?
We have their bones.
And people make their whole fucking careers on studying dinosaurs.
Yeah.
So they can't be not real.
Right.
Because, like, how could you make, like, a whole fucking career on, like, studying, I don't know, characters from fucking Harry Potter? They're not real. It's not a career.
Well, you can, and that's called YouTube. But, no, I was going to say that's, like, people who spend their whole career studying Bigfoot.
Bigfoot is real.
Okay. I'm going to need to see some hard evidence.
Well... He hides. Like the Megalodon. It's a real legit thing.
But I'm pretty sure the Megalodons are all dead. Or underneath that, like when the plate tectonics move and shit slips in the ocean floor.
And they're there.
Yeah.
Trapped.
Forever.
Like a rat in a cage.
For all of eternity.
So, over the years, and I have to stop saying so... Over the years, scientists have observed massive ocean eddies, which are strong enough and powerful enough to not only pull in animals and, you know, boats and that kind of thing, like kind of, I guess, the Bermuda Triangle in a way. But although the Bermuda Triangle has the ocean and it has the sky. So it's
I thought that the Bermuda Triangle was where people like lost track of time.
Yeah, but they also get sucked away and never seen again.
Yeah, but okay. Yeah, no, fair.
Yeah, yeah.
Amelia Earhart.
Yeah, yeah. The biggest ocean eddies, again, like I said, are 93 miles across or 93 miles in diameter. And that's pretty much like the size
of Where have these been spotted?
Pretty much like the size of the city of Los Angeles in the ocean.
Like by Florida or?
I think they're in the middle of the ocean because they're like in depths. Right?
Okay.
It has to be deep in order for a 93-mile in diameter vortex to form. You got to have some fucking shit under that. Yeah, you got to have something generating that. Like, you can't have it, like, in the fucking tide pool.
Damn, what's up with the moon doing this?
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Different objects and organisms get caught up in eddies, including plastic, oil, plankton. And they're absorbed into these vortexes. Heat and dissolved carbon dioxide can also be absorbed by the vortexes. And interestingly enough, which this is not a disturbing fact, this is just kind of a cool fact, is that scientists believe that ocean eddies have the potential to mitigate some of the negative impacts of climate change.
That's kind of what I was thinking. If, you know, they're... Except for where is this plastic going is the question.
To the megalodons.
Well, because what I was thinking, you know, you see those things. I don't know where those things are located at, but they're real. That, like, people will, like, stick their shoe in, like, holes in lakes or rivers or whatever. And then it'll pop up, like, somewhere on the other side of the world.
Well, that's fucking weird.
Like, what if that's what it's doing?
Maybe.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like in the movie Jennifer's Body.
Yeah.
They put her body in there.
Right.
Sorry, spoiler.
Some of the biggest black holes are located off the southern tip of Africa. And those in that area, two researchers found a group of 7 large ocean eddies.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's scary.
And they named the Agulhas Rings. Agulhas.
Agularas?
No, it's A-G-U-L-A-L-H-A-S.
Aguilars?
There's no fucking R in it.
Uggles?
Yes, that.
Well, I don't know. It sounded like you were like Christina Aguilera.
Yes, they found Christina Aguilera.
Aguilera.
Or they named the black holes after Christina Aguilera. Fuck. These vortexes.
If you wanna be with me.
Right now, I don't know if I do.
I just have so many questions.
Yeah, you do. You're like a 5-year-old. Why is the sky blue? Why is that like that? Why do you do that? Why? Okay. Let me finish so we can wrap it up and get to the case at hand. These vortexes were able to transport the same exact body of water for an entire year without leaking, which helped confirm the existence of coherent water transporting of eddies. So that means that they watched these eddies for a whole entire year and everything that was contained within those eddies didn't leave those eddies.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of cool, yeah?
Yeah, I would say that that's good for climate change in the aspect that, you know, if they were to purposely place plastic waste in there and, you know, the garbage island.
Right, ugh, I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, it's depressing. But if they were to, you know, mitigate them in that kind of a way, then that would be great, except for where does this stuff go?
Well, and of course, humans want to, like, do something with it. They want to, like, try to figure out how to control the eddy or whatever. And so they're like, you know, maybe they could use the eddies to transport oil spills and stuff like that to prevent contamination. But I don't know how you get the eddy to go, like, your Roomba.
Right? That's true. Yeah, I don't know how you Roomba the eddy. Right. I was going to say where they could, like, try and harness electricity out of it. But again, I don't know how you do that without, like, losing whatever you needed in there.
Yeah, so anyway, that's kind of cool, yeah?
That's interesting and, yes,
and disturbing. Well, I feel like the disturbing part is that they're fucking huge and that anything gets in their wake or in their vortex is donezos. So, and that things that go in don't come out.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah.
Talk about what happens to ships. Ships probably get in them and never seen again.
Right, because how many ships have gone missing and never been seen again?
Right.
Which, how do you lose a whole fucking ship?
Yeah, how do you lose a whole ass boat?
Right, in the fucking eddy.
Yeah, in an eddy.
In a 93-mile eddy.
Or it sinks, and then they send people down to look for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that.
No comment.
Right. Anyway,
probably
so that's it.
Delete that part.
Any hoodles, That's that.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Do you really think nice?
Yeah, I think that's interesting.
Okay.
It's scary.
It's
actually.
Right. Well, that's why I said it was disturbing, because I'm like, holy shit. It's
science-y.
Science can be disturbing.
Science is always disturbing.
Like your fucking maggot thing. I cannot even get that out of my head. Yeah, I have pushed that down, and thanks for reminding me. It's the maggot thing I can't escape.
Well, if something ever severe happens to you and you have to go to the hospital, I'm going to tell them yes on maggot therapy.
Gross. Thanks.
I'd be like, yes, yes. As your power of attorney, yes, she would like maggot therapy.
Fuck, because I hate flies more than a lot of things that I hate.
Flies are at the top of the hatred list.
Yeah, they're at least in the top three, I'll betcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to have to find some more disturbing facts about flies.
Ugh. Okay, cool.
Give you nightmares.
Right. All right. Let's get to it, child.
Okay. I asked you if you'd heard of this and you'd never heard of this. So that was good. Today we're going to be talking about who put Bella in the witch elm. And that's witch, like W-Y-C-H, not witch like magic or witch like witch elm. Which one? It's a different kind of witch. not like a sand witch. Switch it with a Y. And then you have your sand Y witch. Elm tree.
Elm tree. Let's be clear.
Yes. All right. So sometime in April, I read it was April 18th, but I'm not really sure because only some places said it was April 18th and other places just said in April.
Like this year?
No, of 1943.
Okay.
In England, four boys, they were teenage-ish, went to the Hagley Hall estate of Worcestershire.
Worcestershire? Worcestershire?
Worcestershire.
No, you're saying it right.
I'm like, I'm just saying it.
Can say Worcestershire?
Worcestershire,
or
yeah.
Worcestershire?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Anyway. Which belonged to Lord Cobham.
Cobham?
They went there to bird hunt and or find eggs so they could eat. These boys were Bob Hart, Tom Willits, Fred Payne, and Bob Farmer.
Were they hungry?
Yeah, this was in the middle of World War II. So there was food rationing, and nearly every night they experienced air raids.
Oh, yeah, 1943. Gotcha.
Yep. Yep, right in the middle of the war.
Yeah.
Sucks. So they also had their dogs with them so they could hopefully, like, catch some rabbits, the dogs, and, you know, provide more food to eat the dogs. Not eat the dogs, but the dogs could catch the food.
Right. And hopefully they're going to feed the dogs.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Yeah, they brought them in hopes, I guess, of them hunting with them. So Bob Farmer, he reached his hand into the witch elm. Not witch elm. Witch elm.
Which elm did he reach his hand into?
The witch elm. Tree trunk that was hollowed out, hoping to find some eggs. And he saw, like, this matte-looking white thing. So he's like, oh, yeah, that's an egg. But then he pulled out a skull.
Oh, that's not an egg.
That's not an egg. Nope. So he said that there was a small patch of rotting flesh on the forehead. Gross. And some hair attached to it.
So is this like Stranger Things?
The teeth were crooked? No.
Okay.
Not quite. Almost. But not quite. Okay. No, she did not come from the upside down. I don't. That's a theory, though.
Well, maybe that's where the upside down came from. Anyway, back to the elm witch.
The elm witch. Witch elm.
The witch elm.
So since they entered on private property, the boys all made a pact not to tell that they found a skull in a tree in the witch elm.
Oh, sure. Keep that to yourself.
Since they were scared of uncovering a potential murder and the fear of trespassing. But then the youngest boy, Tom Willits, who was 17. That's why I said like teenage-ish, because he's the youngest one and he's 17.
Okay.
He was like, I can't hold this in any longer, guys. So he went home and he cracked to his dad. And his father like called the police, and when they checked the trunk of the tree, they found an almost complete skeleton, a crepe-soled shoe, a gold wedding ring, which was like a fake wedding ring, also not real gold, and some fragments of clothing. The skull was valuable evidence, obviously, and that it still had some tufts of hair in it and had a clear dental pattern despite missing teeth on it. And after further investigation, they found a hand that was some distance from the tree, and they also found a another shoe outside the tree.
The same shoe?
The matching shoe. Okay. That, like, they had, like, the left foot in the tree and then the right foot was somewhere else. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
But not the foot, the shoe.
Gotcha.
Just the hand was outside of the tree. So the body was sent for forensic examination by the Birmingham-based home office pathologist, James Webster. He quickly established that it was a female who had been dead for at least 18 months, placing the time of death in or before October of 1941. And he'd also discovered a section of taffeta in her mouth, suggesting that she had died from suffocation. And from the measurement of the trunk in which the body had been discovered, he also assumed that, you know, she was placed there while she was still warm before rigor had set in.
Or after she's unstiffened and softened again.
Yeah, after rigor. But once rigor, she wouldn't have been able to fit in there while she was in rigor.
Yeah. But after rigor, you unrigor again.
You unrigor, yeah. You go soft again.
Mm-hmm. You become pliable.
So Professor Webster, he also found that he was, like, pretty sure this was a murder because he said, I cannot imagine a woman accidentally slipping in there. Neither do I think it reasonable for a woman to crawl into that place and commit suicide.
And to shove some taffeta down her throat and suffocate herself.
Yeah. Right? Not a great idea.
I think there's easier ways to commit suicide for sure.
Yeah, a lot. And, like, why would you go down a tree to do it? Upside down?
Well, maybe you don't want to be found. Although the taffeta blows the theory for me.
Which he also said that it was an excellent place for concealment of a murder. And I think it indicates local knowledge. That's what he said.
Well, yeah, because you have to know that hole is there and it's big enough to put someone in.
A body in. Yeah. Big enough for a body.
Yeah.
So police could tell from the items that were found with her body what she had, what the woman had looked like. Police could tell from items found with the body what she had looked like. But there were so many people reported missing at this time during the war.
Mm-hmm.
That records were too numerous for, you know, them to, like, properly identify her. They cross-referenced the details they had with, you know, reports of missing people, like, within the region, within the area. But nothing seemed to match her body. Like, the reports of the missing people, none of them made any sense to be her.
Right.
In addition, they also reached out to all the dentists because remember I told you her jaw was really irregular, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
A nationwide, like, whole slew of dentists, they produced no candidates. And at this point, then things, like, went real south. Professor Margaret Murray, who was a respected anthropologist, she at this time, after all the dental things had been ruled out,
mm-hmm.
she was like, she's like, I think there's a reason why they put her body in this tree. Dun, dun, dun! So the crepe sole shoe, it was traced back to the Waterfoot Company in Lancashire, and investigators were able to find the owners of all six pairs, which had been sold from a market stall in Dudley, a town approximately 11 miles from Birmingham where they had found her body.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually the case turned cold because, like I said, this is wartime. You know, her case was huge for a minute. Because they're like, what the fuck?
Well, that's what I was thinking. A body in a tree. I was thinking when you were saying, oh, and this person that, and then they did a canvas and they checked all these. And I'm thinking, how do they have time for this during the war?
Well, because they wanted to solve it, but then they didn't. But then war. And so, you know, other things took precedence.
Yeah.
So around Christmas time, though, of 1943, some chalk appeared written on the side of a house nearby Old Hill that read, "Who put Lou Bella down in the witch elm?" And so this was the first time.
Sorry, I had a look and she did have no voice came out.
So this was the first time that a name had been connected to, you know, this case, to this woman, whoever she is.
So somebody just wrote it on the side of someone's house?
Yeah.
With chalk?
With chalk.
That's random.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, and I feel like it has to be the person who did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't argue that.
Because how else would you know all, you know, her name and where she was at?
Yeah, you wouldn't, right?
It's like, riddle me this, Batman.
Yeah, truly. So, again, this is the first time a name had ever been connected. And over the next couple of months, messages began to appear, like, in that town in a lot of different places, all with the same handwriting. And gradually they started saying, who put Bella in the witch elm dash Hagleywood?
Hagleywood?
Hagleywood was that place where they were at the forest.
Oh, okay. Where they were trespassing.
Yeah.
So it's not a public forest. It's a private forest.
Yeah. It was a property. It was an estate somebody owned.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm like, I lost myself for a minute.
Don't you remember Lord Cobham?
Yes.
So, you know, obviously this meant that somebody who did this killed her, like you just said. But police couldn't find the person who was writing all these things. And then, you know, it turned into a whodunit kind of case in the town. So by the late 40s, they started to appear again, the new messages, who put Bella in the witch elm. In the late 40s, they started to appear again.
Wow.
Yeah. So it kind of, this case like kind of ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
Through different things. On March 30th, 1944, the Evening Dispatch said this: the writing was too high on the wall to have been done by boys, and the police are inclined to view that it is the work of someone coming into the city in the early morning with farm produce. So it's kind of really freaking random, but like basically they don't know who's writing these things. They don't know who Bella is, if her name's even Bella.
So they're just assuming it's a farm person?
Yeah.
Okay,
coming into nobody the town else, in the early morning hours.
Yeah, because nobody else can get up early and go do that.
Nope, I guess not. Farmers only.
.com.
Yeah. Okay, now let's talk about some theories.
Let's do it. Because
really, that's kind of our dead end of the case.
For real?
For real.
Okay. Why do you do this?
What do you mean?
You do cases that don't have a resolution.
But these theories are crazy.
Okay.
You're going to... This
so
is
you
why.
Had the Honolulu Strangler. You had Samuel Little. You had Maria Ridoff. Well, Samuel Little, we just don't know all the people.
We don't know all the victims.
So, yeah. So there was a resolution, but you know what I mean. You did Maria Ridoff.
I don't know. Maybe I'm feeling unsolved recently.
I guess. Keep the mystery alive.
I know. That's what my mom's always like. I hate unsolved. So what do I do? Unsolved. Okay, so the first theory is kind of like a transient theory, is that, quote, Bella, you know, we don't really know if her name's Bella.
Right.
Must have been someone with a transient lifestyle. Transient meaning that, you know, they're not traced in life and they're not missed in death.
That's really sad.
It is really sad.
But she had to live close to there because her shoes were bought 11 miles from there.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't mean she's not a transient.
Yeah, I guess. Like a vagrant, like somebody that just falls off the grid.
Right. And yeah. In August 2014, BBC Radio 4 broadcast a program that said that Bella was a prostitute who worked the streets around Hagley Road. And according to police files, Bella, quote, had disappeared in 1941, which would fit the timeline of the events. And locals pointed out the fact that gypsies had camped out in the vicinity of Hagley Woods during 1941, and that perhaps she was one of them and she had been killed by a member of her own community.
And then they just came back and were writing in chalk.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then another theory is that Bella was a local barmaid who had been killed by an American GI.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so far, like, the prostitute one the best.
I have so many more for you.
Okay. Keep going.
I ranked them, if you will. So, like, we started with, like, my least favorite theories.
Which is the transient. The transient.
Yeah.
Okay.
Prostitute, yeah, those things. Mm-hmm. And we're getting into my second favorite theory, because they kind of have like umbrellas, but like with variations. So the second theory is that she was a German spy.
Okay.
You're so confused. I see it all over your face.
Well, no, she could have been a German spy. I mean, maybe. Well,
I'm going to give you the evidence.
Okay. The crepe shoe.
The crepe shoe. Crepe sold shoe. So several German spies at this time were captured in the UK, obviously. It's World War II. Mm-hmm. Like, duh. And as a result, in 1953, the case of Bella and the Witch Elm, attracted some new theories, which was war espionage and that she was a German spy. The Wolverhampton Express and Star received a letter from somebody who identified herself as Anna of Claverley, and she claimed to have information about the identity of Bella. And then she was interviewed by journalist Wilfred Byford Jones. And according to, you know, Anna, quote, she identified herself as Anna.
Right.
That Bella was a member of a spy ring seeking information about the location of local munitions factories that could then be targeted by the Luftwaffe. I don't know how you say that.
Sounds good.
Luftwaffe.
Sounds good.
German. German word. So Anna was later identified as Una Mossop. And she alleged that her RAF pilot husband, Jack Mossop, had witnessed Bella's death. And she said that Mossop told her that they had become involved in a spy ring along with a Dutchman called Van Raft. And one evening, Van Raft, accompanied by a woman Mossop believed to be Bella, had picked up Mossop in his car. Shortly after, Van Raft strangled her. And then, you know, allegedly because she was a spy, he strangled her.
Is her husband alive to corroborate her story?
Well, I don't know. There's not really much else about that. But
sorry, I didn't mean to ask you a question you don't have the answer to. How does it feel?
Weird. Makes you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, you only did that to me 18 times during my disturbing fact.
Like, that's one variation of the German spy story, but I'm going to give you another version of it with the same players.
Okay. Same players.
With the same characters.
It's like a game of Clue. You just shuffle it.
Yeah, and basically.
You're always going to have Colonel Mustard and Miss Scarlet.
Yeah.
But the roles are changed.
Right. Sometimes it was with the candlestick in the
dining room.
Yeah. And other times it was with the shovel in the garden.
Yeah.
Oh, that was lame, Daphne, a shovel in the garden. That's so obvious.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
It was with a rope in the basement.
Yeah, there you go.
So another version of this is that Jack Mossop and Van Raft had been drinking with Bella in a local pub when she got drunk and then she had passed out. What are you going to say? See something happening on your face?
No, I just, like, yeah.
I know this. I told you this is going to take you all over the place.
Well, because this is me going back to she's a prostitute.
Maybe. And then the two men had placed her in a tree to teach her a lesson. And when she awoke, she was unable to climb out and she had perished in the tree. And this theory, though, obviously, you know, doesn't explain the taffeta in her mouth.
Right.
So whichever version was reported to the newspaper, which is, you know, obviously kind of lost in time. But what is known is that Jack Mossop died in St. George's Hospital in Stafford before, quote, Bella, her body was discovered.
Oh, so her husband's dead and can't corroborate it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. This thing is like swinging all over the place. No, it's kidding. Like a wrecking ball. So allegedly reoccurring nightmare. Just can't get it together. Allegedly reoccurring nightmares of Bella's skull stuffed inside the tree ultimately led to his mental breakdown, which is why he died in the hospital.
Okay.
Jack Mossop?
Yeah, no, yeah. I get it. It just sounds a little far-fetched.
However, Van Raft, he was never found. And they considered that the wife, that her testimony was hearsay from an estranged wife. That's what investigators just believed about it.
Okay.
That it was kind of just hearsay.
That was bullshit.
And she told the story 12 years after the discovery of Bella.
Hmm.
So weird, right?
She's an aspiring writer.
Yeah, she is an aspiring writer. Okay, so here's another one that actually kind of gives some weight to the spy theory.
Okay.
Declassified M15 files revealed some information about a spy named Joseph Jacobs. I don't know. I know it's Joseph is definitely the first name.
Yes.
Joseph Jacobs.
Go with that. I like it.
Who was captured after breaking his ankle while parachuting into Cambridgeshire in 1941.
God, that would suck.
Yeah, right. This story's crazy. Like, these people lived crazy lives.
Yeah, that's that would suck.
This is like the Alvin Karpis all over again. I was like, whoa, he's jumping from trained. Whoa, man. This guy's parachuting.
Breaking his ankle.
So after Josef's arrest, a photograph in his pocket of the glamorous German actress and cabaret singer, Clara, I don't know how you say her last name. This one, I was really struggling with it earlier, like looking up how to pronounce it and struggling really hard. So we're just going to call her Clara B. Yeah, they found that picture of her. And Jacobs told the people that Clara was his lover and that the Third Reich had Third Reich?
The Third Reich.
Yeah, Reich. The Third Reich
had
recruited her as a spy.
Okay.
Yeah. And
she was a German actress?
Yeah, and cabaret singer.
Okay.
So according to Josef, Clara had parachuted into the West Midlands in 1941 and then disappeared. She was nowhere to be found again.
Hmm.
So Josef was never able to, like, shed any more light on anything that happened or anything about her because he was executed by the firing squad in August of 1941.
Jeez.
Death left, right, and center here.
No kidding.
However, I know you're loving this.
What happened was...
It is confirmed that Bella is not Clara and Clara is not Bella.
Okay.
Because Clara was about 5'10".
Mm-hmm.
And Bella was only 5 feet. And in 2016, they discovered that Clara had died in a Berlin hospital in December of 1942.
Okay.
Yeah. All over the place. So before her body was even discovered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before Bella's body. Okay. Are you ready for my favorite theory?
Yes.
You have a guess as to what it is?
How could I possibly fucking have any kind of a guess? This story's been insane.
I thought you would like it.
Well, other than the fact that there's no resolution.
Okay, this is the next theory. Black magic.
Oh, okay, yeah. Now we're cooking with grease.
This is why I saved this one for last.
All right.
This is why I ranked some. So, remember...
This is the Daphne scale of theories.
Uh-huh. Basically. I mean, I don't know if it's the most truthful of all of them, but it's my favorite one.
It sounds the funnest.
It sounds the best, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds the best. So remember that anthropologist we talked about earlier, Professor Margaret Murray?
Mm-hmm.
So remember how Bella's hand was severed from her arm?
Mm-hmm.
So Margaret was like, ooh, what if this is about the occult ceremony, the Hand of Glory?
Mm.
You know what that is?
No, how could I know?
Good, because I have like 10 pages of explanation here on Holy the Hand shit. Of Glory.
Okay.
It's pretty interesting. It's not actually 10 pages, but...
I'm like, okay, everybody just chill.
Buckle in.
Right? Yeah. No, why would I know something like that?
I don't know.
I'm not into the occult.
I know you're not, but you've heard of things.
Yes, there are things I have heard of.
I feel this like is not you've one heard of them. The Ouija board.
Well, yeah, because it's a fucking Hasbro game or some shit.
Nice.
Right?
That's weird.
Monopoly and the Ouija board.
Yeah, that's odd. I don't like that.
Yeah, you think? Okay, do tell well, about the
Monopoly man's really a ghost. Okay, Hand of Glory is a traditional form of punishment under Islamic law and in medieval Europe involved publicly amputating a criminal's body part, which was often the one used to commit a crime.
Well, that makes sense.
So the pain of the amputation and the shame of the permanent mark served as a punishment for the criminal, while the display of the severed limb functioned as a sinister warning to all onlookers. And it was, you know, like, you do as this guy does, this is going to happen to you.
Yeah.
So this macabre tradition likely has its roots in the Code of Hammurabi. Hammurabi.
I love how you look at me when stuff you can't pronounce. I like, okay, sometimes I got you, but most of the time I feel like I don't.
Okay, so the Code of Hammurabi is a Babylonian code of laws from ancient Mesopotamia, which is now Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And it was enacted by Hammurabi, the sixth Babylonian king. So the set of ancient laws dates to about 1772 BC.
Wow.
and is one of the oldest translated writings in the world. Today, there's like partial copies of it that exist on stone and clay tablets. And the code consists of 282 laws with scaled penalties, which I'm sure you've heard of these. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth.
Yeah. 282
laws. That's a lot. With different penalties.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. What that tells me is people were really fucking up.
Yeah. Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
Right.
Eye for an eye, you've heard of, is a legal principle of reciprocity that, you know, you take out that guy's eye, we're going to take out your eye.
Right. You kill somebody, we're going to kill you.
Right. So, exactly, you know, a life for a life, if you will, too. This is my favorite example of this. I don't know why, but it says that if a son has struck his father, his hands would be cut off.
Wow.
Yeah.
Both of them?
Yeah. I guess if he did it with both hands.
Okay. I'm like, well, then how's he supposed to feed himself or bathe?
He's not.
Or brush his teeth.
He can't. Well, you really think they're brushing their teeth back then?
Maybe.
I mean, I'm sure they had some kind of oral hygiene, but I don't know about, like, the toothbrush.
They use a bamboo stick.
We both made the same face, like, showed our teeth. In Europe, severed hands of criminals were displayed like relics to prevent, you know, future cases of people doing the misdeeds that these people had done.
Right.
There's actually a thief's arm that still dangles in a church in Prague to this day. Oof. Yeah. And in most cases, the owner of the hand is not known, or via, you know, whatever body part is not known. But the provenance was usually irrelevant because the setting of the hand's exhibition determined that the story was told about its origin.
Okay.
So the Hunch of Venison in Wiltshire, England, is a 684-year-old pub that was famous for its display of a cursed gambler's hand. I'm just giving you all kinds of examples of this, but if you want me to keep moving forward, I will.
Well, you've put the work in. You need to continue.
I have. I just feel like you're bored.
No, I'm not bored. I'm just like, I'm thinking about all the weird shit that, like, all the weird shit. Like Ripley's Believe It or Not kind of stuff, or like, you know, how there's like a shrunken head in a, you know, like that's what's happening in my brain.
Okay.
Not boredom.
Good. So
it's wandering.
Wandering. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That pub I just told you about, the hand was reportedly amputated from a gambler who was caught cheating during a game of whist a few hundred years ago. And according to workers at the pub, a butcher chopped off his hand and threw it into the fireplace. And then the relic was discovered during renovation work in the pub in 1911 and was stored in a locked glass case.
Did he cut it off on purpose?
Yeah, for cheating.
No, not the gambler. The guy who cut his hand off and threw in the fire.
No. It was a butcher who chopped off the gambler's hand.
Oh, okay. I thought a butcher chopped off his own hand.
No.
And threw it in the fire.
No, he chopped off the gambler's hand for cheating.
Okay.
But then they discovered it in 1911, and they put it in a glass case that's locked with a pack of 18th century playing cards.
So they're, like, they're charred remains.
Or probably just, like, bone.
Yeah.
At this point.
Because I know it's like forever ago, but part of what's happening in my brain too is that I'm picturing like decaying flesh and like blood dripping and like, you know, nasty horror movie kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But
it's gross.
Huh? Obviously, if it's a million years old, it's going to be down to bone.
Right. Yeah. So.
That takes 684
years old. and in 2010, some people broke into the pub, unscrewed the glass, and stole the hand.
Oh, geez. Why would you want that?
I don't know why you'd want that, but it's not there anymore.
It sounds like super bad karma. And then what are you going to do with it?
Right?
Because you can't be like, hey, I stole this hand.
And like pawn it off.
Well, even just to tell people.
Yeah. I stole
like
a hand.
Like, you put it on your coffee table. Like, you prop it up and put a fucking candle in it or some shit.
Yeah,
there you go. And then people are like, what is that? Oh, nothing.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But, like, not an actual human hand.
Okay.
But I guess, you know, if you see one, you maybe should question that. Did you break into a pub and steal that by any chance?
Yeah, because you, like, you're not going to want to tell people that you did that.
No, you're just going to want to display it and show it off.
Yeah, and can you think about the karma?
Yeah, icky. Yeah. Bad karma. Bad karma for sure. Mm-hmm. So during the demolition of an old town in 1905 in North Rhine-Westphalia in Germany, workers found an amputated hand that was preserved in limestone, and it became known as the perjury hand. And from 1907, it was stored in a wooden box at St. Brigida's Catholic Church. And according to legend, the hand was severed as punishment for breaking an oath, and it was displayed again, you know, to serve as those who, you know, might go down the path of the same fate.
And you would think that for perjury, they would cut their tongue out.
Yeah. I don't understand the hand for a lie. Because you can still lie
with, yeah, hand.
Yeah, a hand for a lie doesn't make any sense. But, you know, what do we know?
Well, I know they fucked up.
Nobody knew who the hand belonged to or why the owner was actually punished. They just assumed it was perjury.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's also super dumb.
Yeah, but it just became known as the perjury hand.
You see a severed hand and you go, I bet that guy was a fucking liar.
Maybe that's why they put it in a church, so you can't lie.
You can lie in church. It doesn't make you a good person.
Right.
Lying in general doesn't make you a good person.
That's absolutely the truth.
Yeah.
And we circle right back around to the hand was stolen in 2012.
Oh my God, what is with these hand thieves?
I don't know. But eventually, it was sad because when it was stolen, that was the time that they had raised enough money to send it to Dusseldorf University to see the owner's sex and their age.
Ugh.
They had just raised enough money to do that. And fuck, then it was stolen.
God.
This is just like a bad fucking path of karma happening here.
Yeah.
So sometimes amputated hands of felons were used to commit crimes rather than prevent them, obviously. According to an old European belief, a candle made out of a dried, severed hand of a criminal who had been hanged, known as the Hand of Glory, had supernatural powers. And traditionally, a Hand of Glory was the pickled right hand of a felon cut off while the body still hung from the gallows. It was used by burglars to send the sleeping victims in a house into a coma from which they were unable to wake.
Okay.
So just all fucked up all around.
Yeah. And now I'm picturing the candle wax in the hand.
You're going to like this next part.
Okay.
So there's a couple versions, obviously, that we already discussed of the hand of glory. And in one interpretation, a clenched hand is used as a candle holder with a candle held between the bent fingers.
Well, I knew I couldn't have been the first person to think of that.
In another version, the hand at the Whitby Museum in England, all five fingers of an outstretched hand were lit. And if one of the fingers did not light, the burglar saw it as a sign that someone in the house was still awake. And the Whitby Museum is the only place that's left to have the, you know, the last known Hand of Glory.
Okay.
So, I mean, we already know, you know, they're in somebody's house somewhere, but... or buried, but...
Or like it's in a trunk and then your grandma dies and then you clean out the attic and you're like, what the fuck? Why is there a hand in here?
God damn it, Grandma. I'd be so pissed.
Yeah, that...
And confused.
Yeah.
Be like, I have a lot of questions. I need a little seance. Gotta ask you questions, Grandma. So back to our anthropologist, Margaret.
Okay.
So she concluded that the murder was concluded that the murder was somehow connected to another case, which potentially involved witchcraft as well, which was the murder of Charles Walton. And I'm going to tell you about that case because I know you're going to go, wow, what happened to Charles Walton?
Oh my God, yes.
So
do tell.
On Valentine's Day of 1945, he left his home with a pitchfork and a slash hook, which is a double-edged pruning thing with a sharpened straight edge on one side and a concave cutting edge on the other. And Edith, who was a girl that he adopted and also was like his housekeeper.
So it was his slave.
Yeah. But he adopted her when she was 3. And at this point, she was
And then he turned her into a slave.
And then at this point, she's like in her 30s. So she's making money. She stated that Charles had left his purse at home and he had And he was witnessed having passed through a churchyard between 9 and 9:30 a.m. And on this particular day, he was slashing hedges in the field known as Hill Ground above the slopes of Meon Hill. And Charles, he was expected to be home by 4 p.m. And Edith, she returned around 6 and he wasn't there. And she thought that maybe he was with the neighbors, like having a drink or, you know, at the local pub having a drink. So she went out looking for him. And then she went to see her neighbor, who was an agricultural worker. And his name was Harry Beasley. So they made their way to the first to alert Alfred Potter. And he said that he last saw him earlier that day slashing hedges where he said he was going to be what he was doing, right? Mm-hmm. So then the three of them went to go look for where he was. And then they found his body near a hedgerow. They had beaten him over the head with his own stick. They cut his neck open with the slash hook.
Jeez.
They drove the prongs of the pitchfork onto either side, like through either side of his neck, pinning him to the ground.
God, I don't like that.
And then they wedged the handle of the pitchfork and buried it in his neck.
Oh, why?
So he was real fucking dead.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
Talk about overkill.
Yeah.
Why?
Why did they do it?
Uh-huh.
Witchcraft.
Okay.
Remember I said that she thinks that they could be connected through witchcraft?
Yeah, but...
with Bella?
Okay. No, but... okay.
Did you forget we were talking about Bella?
No, I'm... duh. Bella, who put Bella in the witch elm?
Witch elm?
The elm witch.
The elm witch. Remember Professor Webster that we talked about earlier?
Mm-hmm.
So he was one of the men on the case, as well as Chief Inspector Robert Fabian.
On Charles's case?
On Charles's case.
Okay.
And Detective Albert Webb. And they arrived to the case. They were assigned to investigate it.
Mm-hmm.
And two reports that Robert, investigator, wrote on the case in 1945, which are both preserved on the police file. They make no mention of witchcraft, killing, like ritualistic killings, anything like this. However, 25 years later, he started talking, and this is what he had to say.
Fast forward.
I advise anyone who is tempted at any time to venture into black magic, witchcraft, shamanism, call it what you will, to remember Charles Walton and to think of his death, which was clearly the ghastly climax of a pagan rite. There is no stronger argument for keeping as far away as possible from the villains with their swords, incense, and mumbo jumbo. It is prudence on which your future, peace of mind, and even your life could depend.
Okay, I'm just really stuck on the fact that how do they know that it was witchcraft? How did they know it wasn't just some fucking brutal sick fuck?
Well, it's unsolved. Ugh. Do you want to hear the theories about this case?
Sure.
I did a lot of extensive research because I didn't want you to be like, well, what happened to him? And why do they think it's witchcraft?
Yeah.
I want you to hear the facts.
Yeah.
Because I know you and you'll be like, well, why did they think that?
Yeah. Just the facts, ma'am.
Yeah, just the facts. Well, here are the theories.
Okay.
These are not facts.
Fuck.
So it's claimed that locals believed that Charles was a witch whose powers were feared by some of the villagers. It was claimed that he could cast the evil eye and that he kept netherjack toads as pets and used them to blight the crops and livestock of the local farmers.
Why would he do that?
I don't know why he did that. Maybe he didn't like them.
Okay.
If he's casting an evil eye, he probably doesn't like you, right?
Without a doubt.
So two examples of this, of the fact that this could be true, were that in 1944, there was failures of harvests, which, you know, his toads.
Or just fucking bad crops.
And remember the neighbor Potter that Edith went to?
Mm-hmm.
His cow died the day before Charles died. Yeah, he died. The cow died the day before Charles died.
And what was it, a coincidence?
I don't know. But I mean, I feel like that also makes me point my finger at, you know, Potter. That like
for killing Charles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that too. But I'm like,
but
cows just die.
They do just die. But he was apparently plaguing the land.
Okay.
Because like they said, he was, you know, blasting blight on the crops and on the livestock.
Okay.
To kill shit.
Sorry. I just think that's bullshit. Okay. But I mean, people can believe whatever they want
to
believe.
So it was claimed that his alleged witchcraft led him to be murdered in a ritualistic manner, which involved his blood soaking into the ground to replenish the soil's fertility.
Okay. Don't you think Edith would know if he was a witch practicing witchcraft?
Probably.
Was she questioned?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay.
Because it said that she was like really distraught finding him.
Well, as one would be.
Yeah. Even though it said her dad was also alive, so I'm not really sure how she got adopted. But he adopted her. Now, we're bringing it kind of back to your Sehuanaba.
Okay.
That's the dog, right?
That's the chick that's a horse.
Oh, no. What were the dogs called?
Which ones?
The black dogs.
Oh, I can't remember.
The demon dogs.
I can't remember.
Okay.
Sorry.
So, again, more local folklore about this was that they believed that phantom black dogs roamed the area and that they were a harbinger of death. And it was claimed that soon after Charles's murder, a black dog was found hanging out at a tree by his murder site.
Hellhound.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
And Fabian wrote that he encountered a black dog while walking at dusk on Meon Hill, like shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
And then he relayed the story, and his story that he relayed, though, later, was that the dog ran past him, and shortly afterwards, he met a local boy walking in the same direction. He asked if the boy was looking for his dog, but when he mentioned the animal's color, the boy turned deathly pale and fled in the opposite direction.
Okay.
So just some weird shit happening all around here.
Yep.
So that's enough about Charles. Again, that case is unsolved. But that anthropologist was like, well, maybe they're related.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, weird. They were only a few years apart.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think not far away from each other either.
Well, you have a serial witch hunter.
The circumstances of it.
Yeah.
But it didn't say anything about Bella being a witch.
No,
it just says witchcraft might have been used.
Cut her hand off.
She may have done something bad. Maybe mm-hmm. Maybe it's a combination of the witchcraft and the German spies.
Combo platter.
Yeah. Maybe she was a German spy. And then they were like, we're going to cut your hand off.
Right.
And kill you. Again, the theory that witchcraft was involved because of the plant, Belladonna, which is also known as the deadly nightshade.
Yeah, we love it.
And witch hazel are both widely associated with the occult. And according to local legend,
I'm really having a hard time.
And according to local legend, so is Hagley Woods.
Okay.
The fact that Bella was entombed inside of a tree rather than being buried is also, you know, an indicator of rituals instead of.
That I get.
Yeah. And that's, you know, again, according to Professor Margaret, the
anthropologist. And or convenience.
Yeah, and or convenience. Although they said that the tree was like high enough where she wouldn't have just crawled into it.
No, I'm just saying the killer.
Yeah.
Like he was like, oh, fuck.
But I don't know why.
Where am I going to put this body?
I don't know why you'd rather like literally throw a body up and into a hole as opposed to digging a hole for it to go in or just leaving it.
Well, I don't know.
I don't either. Could have really thrown some people off his scent. Ooh, but what if it was the Lord who owned the property? He's like, I'm going to throw people off my scent, put on my own property.
Right. No one will suspect I did it when it's on my property.
Right. So the theory that she was executed for some crime against a coven gathered some steam. However, I mean, it's still like, I think people want to think it's like the most widely believed theory and like most popular theory to this day.
The witchcraft thing. Okay.
Although investigators have really quickly dismissed that because they think that her hand was just scattered by animals.
And there's that. Well, I was thinking that too because I was thinking the shoe was in one place and the other shoe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because literally what came to my mind is fucking dogs. Where's my shoe?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, where's my shoe?
Yeah.
So in 2018, the speculation about who's Bella, who put Bella in the witch elm, started to recirculate again. And a British anthropologist, Caroline Wilkinson, created a facial reconstruction of Bella, which we'll put on the Instagram.
That I love.
Yep. With physical features based on the photographs of her skull. And she is actually pretty well known in doing what she does, making facial reconstruction photos,
mm-hmm.
because she made headlines when she created a facial reconstruction of King Richard III when his remains were uncovered in Lake Leicester. In a parking lot.
Probably right.
In a parking lot in 2012.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
King Richard III?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I mean, obviously, like, buried beneath the parking lot.
Yeah, no, I got you.
I don't think somebody, like, stole his bones. And like,
well, you never know.
Yeah, I guess you don't. And it's like, I'm ready to get rid of him now.
Right. Some royalty buried in just a random place, though. That makes, yeah.
Yeah.
That's curious.
It is. It's real curious. It's real suspect. So the most notable and probable theory is that she was a homeless woman with no loved ones who reported her missing.
Aww.
And quite simply, they just think that she was probably a woman who just fell through the cracks.
That's sad.
And they've lost a lot of her DNA evidence, so now they can't test it.
Of course.
Today's technology.
Yeah, of course.
So that's the case.
So they don't have her skull or anything?
I don't know.
Well, they don't. Otherwise, they test that.
Well, I know they have the pictures of it, but the actual DNA.
I can't do DNA.
I'm
pictures.
Pretty sure they like lost most of her or like misplaced her.
Yeah, I hate that when evidence is misplaced.
Yeah, it's dumb.
Yeah, like, oh gosh, where did I put that body?
Yeah, what do we do with that again?
I mean, I could see if the building that it was stored in, like, burned down or was bombed or something, because we're in World War II. I don't know. Misplaced.
Yeah. Well, and I'm surprised they also, like, didn't do a burial for her. Or not that I know of. I couldn't see. I didn't find anything about, like, a burial.
Okay.
Or, like, an unmarked headstone or, like, you know, who put Bella in the Witch Elm.
An unmarked. It'd be marked.
With who put Bella in the Witch Elm.
Yeah.
But I feel like that would be just like a tourist thing at that point, which all cemeteries kind of are anyway. So whatever.
Right.
I don't know. I rest my case.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
So what do you think? What's the most plausible theory?
In my opinion, I don't know what I believe.
Okay.
I believe that maybe she was wrong place, wrong time. So that could have been like somebody who shouldn't have been in England at the time.
So you're going spy.
Not necessarily spy, but like she could have been of a different, you know, nationality. She might have not been from there.
And
considering that none of the dentists like recognized her irregular pattern of her teeth. And they said that she had something done in her mouth where a dentist should be able to look at it and be like, oh, yeah, that's my work. Let me get you this patient file.
Gotcha.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
Yeah. But no dentist, like,
recognize the work.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense. Well, then I go to the vagrant prostitute theory.
Okay. Your theory? That's your
Number one choice.
Okay. You don't like the witchcraft? Was it too weak for you?
It was weak.
I just think it's fun.
Yeah. No, and I'm not dismissing your research or anything. It's the evidence that was presented that you found. That's
Thanks.
Weak. I'm not saying that you didn't find the right stuff. I'm just saying what's presented to you on the internet that you uncovered, that you found, I find it to be weak.
Okay. Boom. Yeah. No, I don't disagree. I don't think it was witchcraft, but I definitely think witchcraft exists and is out there.
Oh, 100%.
But I don't think that was what happened to her.
No, I don't either. I would love to know what people think. So when we put it on Instagram, if you guys post your comments and what you guys think, I would love to know that.
Yeah. And our Instagram is...
@ That's Disturbing Podcast.
Yes, she got it.
Because I almost said .com.
@gmail.
Oh. No, I almost said .com.
No.
So I had to...
That's our website. That's DisturbingPodcast.com. .company. And you also do the big old World Wide Web to get there.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, you do. But yeah, anyway, we'll post all this stuff on the gram.
And you already said our Gmail, so.
Yeah, I did.
Because you thought I was.
I thought you were going to, yeah.
What are you looking at?
I was just looking to see if it was dark outside yet, if we were going to run into any German spies or any transients or anything like that.
Some witchcraft.
Yeah, some witchcraft.
With our black cat outside.
Aw, but we love her.
Yeah.
My Aurora.
I'm not going to do it.
Arara.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I saved her from a shelter And then I named her Aurora because her name was Eve. And I was like, no. I was like, she's an Aurora. And then because she was sleepy and Sleeping Beauty is my favorite princess. It just made sense. Anyway, and then you go, hi, Aurora. And she goes, rah, 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 rah. She like totally named herself with the Aurora.
Yes.
Because she says her name back to you. It's hilarious. My little black cat.
All right. Well, thanks, Daphne. Much appreciated.
Yes. Sorry you didn't like it.
I did not like it. I'm tired.
Sorry you thought it was lame and all the research I did where I kept telling you for the last couple of weeks. I'm like, I'm so stumped. This is so confusing.
No, I'm tired. And I know I'm always tired, but I'm more tired than normal because we have a sick puppy. So like I've been up like every 2-3 hours in the night for the last 3 nights.
Yeah, we have a poor babe with Giardia.
And so he has...
we've had a lot of rainfall.
Yeah, so he's got diarrhea. And, you know, we have to get up with him in the middle of the night several times. So I've been setting my alarm for like every 2 or 3 hours. And therefore, I'm fucking tired.
Therefore, she's dunzos.
Yeah, and Daphne thinks I don't appreciate her effort.
She doesn't. It's cool, though. All right. Well, next time I'll bring her a solved case.
Yeah, that I fucking need. I just, you know, I'm too Capricorn-y for things to be unfinished.
And you know what's so funny is I feel like it literally has nothing to do with being a Sagittarius that I am so like anti-philosophical. And I don't want to say like I'm anti-philosophical. I just fucking hate philosophy because I am too fucking black and white for any of it. I don't like it because I see the world through black and white. Like sometimes there are gray areas, but like I don't.
Not in Daphne's mind.
I don't prefer to explore those things.
No.
But then again, I like unsolved cases.
Right. It's a.
And I was gonna say, I feel like every Sagittarius I've ever met really likes philosophy and like talking out of their ass with philosophy. And that is just not my jam. It's not that I disagree with it. I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
And one time I was also called stupid by a philosophy teacher.
Ugh. Well, that's fucking bad.
Yeah. I was like, shut up. Like,
yeah, you're stupid.
Yeah, you're a philosophy teacher. I am getting a degree in economics. Philosophy, economics. One's a little more concrete than the other.
And if you're a philosophy instructor and you're listening to this podcast, you have every right to be a philosophy instructor, and people do like philosophy and philosophical ideas.
If Daphne you just have challenged,
and also doesn't like to be called stupid.
Yeah, which if you is have fair. Challenged students, don't call them stupid.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
I'm very challenged when it comes to thinking in gray spaces.
Yeah, no,
I
shit.
I don't like it.
Nope, 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 nope. And yeah. Okay, well, we're going to let you guys go and let ourselves go.
Yeah, because we've been sitting here rambling.
No shit.
For like the last 5 minutes. Bye.